The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to Squawkbox with Arabella Gamadi, myself, Steve Sedgwick, and these are your headlines. Well, steady she goes. The Fed holds steady as its fight against inflation stalls somewhat. But the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, signals a return to rate rises. Well, apparently it's not on the cards.
It's unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. I'd say it's unlikely. Our policy focus is really what I just mentioned, which is how long to keep policy restrictive.
A lot of focus on the banking sector this morning. Asia focused lender Stan Chart posts a 5.5% rise in first quarter pre-tax profit. That beat estimates as it benefits from higher trading income.
Qualcomm jumps in extended trade as demand from Chinese phone makers fuels an earnings beat, while Apple braces for a double-digit decline in China sales when it reports later today. And the Japanese yen whipsawing, hitting its strongest level in around 2 weeks before paring back, a suspicion mounts over further policy intervention.
Well, quite a bit of market oscillation during the press conference last night from the Federal Reserve, from Jay Powell. People trying to work out what was different. Well, yeah, inflation hasn't been slayed yet. They got that one wrong as well. And the pivot of late last year may have looked a bit premature, but the market seems very, very happy of what it saw. I've looked at the Goldman's note, Bank of America note on this one, Barclays note, high frequency economics. I've read a lot of the scribes and everyone's pulling out little bits, but by and large, the mantra seems to be, yeah, we're holding where we are until they see more evidence. And goodness me, on a day-by-day basis, we are getting so much more data. We had private sector payrolls yesterday. We had JOLTS data. We had manufacturing data. And none of that is pointing to either rate hikes or rate cuts at the moment. And of course, the big numbers, non-farm payroll tomorrow. So the data driven mantra that the market will adopt because the Fed is adopting it means you're going to see extreme volatility potentially throughout the summer until we get a clear picture on where the jobs market's going, because that was alluded to yesterday, and indeed where inflation looks like it is as well. So, as I say, the Fed has kept rates on hold and warned the fight against inflation is stalling, all but ruling out any prospect of rate cuts in the very near term. However, markets cheered. Hurrah, they said, when the Fed chair Jerome Powell made remarks that a rate hike is unlikely. How does he know that? How does he know that a rate hike is unlikely, given the fact that they got it wrong on transition at the early part of this cycle? They got it wrong on the pivot, or certainly too early, late last year as well. I'm just saying, two for two, not quite on message, are they? But again, they've got inflation down, but they haven't got it to where it was. Anyway, hike is unlikely, saying the current stance still appears to be sufficiently restrictive. Now, on quantitative tightening, and this is actually very important, the Fed announced it will slow the pace of its balance sheet reductions, cutting the monthly cap on treasuries from $60 billion to just $25 billion. The runoff on mortgage-backed securities remains fixed at $35 billion per month. Now, following the decision, as I say, Powell said the recent upticks in US inflation means the Fed is now expecting to keep rates higher for longer.
So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. In particular, and as I noted earlier, readings on inflation have come in above expectations. It is likely that gaining such greater confidence will take longer than previously expected. We are prepared to maintain the current target range for the federal funds rate for as long as appropriate.
Now, Jay Powell also stressed the Fed will remain fixed to its 2% inflation target.
We are strongly committed to returning inflation to our 2% objective. The committee decided at today's meeting to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 5.25% to 5.5% and to continue the process of significantly reducing our securities holdings, though at a slower pace.
We've got an important guest waiting, so I won't go on too much about these numbers. But net income over at ING first quarter, 1.6 billion euros, give or take the change. CET1 capital ratio, 14.8% as well. Share buyback of up to 2.5 billion euros. I won't go any longer on this because I've got a man who knows far more about it, and that's Tanate Futrakul, who joins us now. Good to see you, sir. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Well, why don't you talk us through the highlights and what you're concerned about in the numbers?
Thank you very much. Very nice to be on the show. I think we had a very strong start to 2024. We continue to add customers. Our lending is strong. Deposit generation is strong. But what particularly marks this quarter is the fact that our fee income is up on the back of a bigger base of customers and also increasing some of our fees on daily banking and other products. I think costs are on track to meet our expectations. And what we see is that risk cost remains modest in through the cycle averages, which means that our customer remains resilient in the current economic situation. And on the back of that strong capital generation and profitability, we have announced a further share buyback of 2.5 billion euros. So we're quite pleased with how things evolved during the first quarter.
Yeah, there's a lot in what you just said, Tanate, but one thing that struck me from the three things you mentioned there about resilience of consumer, improving cost base as well, and improving net fee income is that your jaws are improving as well. That is interesting and very important for this sector because a lot of people have talked about peak earnings, peak net interest margins, peak net interest income as well. Are you saying actually that you can grow your margins in the current environment given those three factors that I highlighted from what you just said?
Well, that depends on the resilience of the current high interest rate environment. I heard on your show talking about the Fed's chairman talking about higher for longer interest rate. That could feed through into what happens with the ECB. But we are comfortable operating resiliently through the current interest rate environment. And even if the rates were to transition to a lower level, I think ING will do fine in, you know, whatever rate environment that turns out to be the case over the next few months or years.
Yeah, Tanate, good morning to you. You speak just as well about increasing your fee income, and that's significant because a large part of your business is still interest rate linked. Is there further need to diversify, further need to kind of grow your customer base here as well?
Absolutely. I think we're very focused in terms of turning our capital, our revenue generation model to be more what we call capital light, which is focused on fee income. And we have a target over the cycle to grow our fee income annually between 5 to 10%. And one of the big drivers of that fee income growth is growth in what we call primary customers, core customers of ING. And we have been able in the past years to grow those at substantial numbers. And we expect to do so again this year.
Yeah, you speak about an aim to increase that fee income by 5 to 10% then as well. Delinquencies haven't necessarily risen as one might expect in a high interest rate environment then, Tanate. Even the higher cost of living in some respects as well. As you said, resilient consumer. Why do you think that is?
I think our customers have really been able to absorb this 5% or 4% interest rate environment really well. I think what is driving, particularly in the retail side of the business, the resilience, is the fact that the labor market remains tight, unemployment is low, and the fact that we operate in a number of Northern European countries where, you know, the resilience of the economies are strong in Netherlands, Germany, and Belgium. And so mortgages, which is a big part of our business, remains really solid.
With that in mind, then, a lot of people have been talking about the divergence between the Federal Reserve and the ECB. Tanate, nothing you've said today makes me think that the ECB needs to cut more aggressively than its peers around the world. Is that accurate, or actually does Europe need a rate cut?
I would agree with that. I think the what goes through the ECB minds is not so dissimilar to the Federal Reserve. It's about the stickiness of inflation, and particularly on wage inflation. I talked a little bit earlier about tight unemployment situation. So we do expect that the discussion around wage inflation will be quite a serious one within the Eurozone and certainly for us as well, in terms of wage negotiation with the unions across the board.
So, Tanate, if things are steady as she goes and things aren't as bleak as some of the worst commentators are, or the most bleak commentators are pointing on out there as well, is there something which I've heard a lot from your peers in the industry, that is structurally wrong with European banking, that can actually be changed so that actually we can lessen the gap between US bank valuations and European bank valuations? It's something at a structural level, whether it's CMU, whether it's banking union, whether it's cross-border transactions, that needs to happen?
Well, I think one of the big proponents from ING is for banking union, right? The free flow of liquidity, free flow of capital among bank subsidiaries of companies like ourselves at ING, with, you know, big subsidiaries in Belgium, in Germany. We would like more freedom to move capital liquidity across our subsidiaries, because at the end of the day, banking is about being digital and but being able to operate at scale. So I think banking union is one of the big solutions to bringing competitiveness to European banking, and we're big proponents and advocate of that.
So who's stopping this, Tenarte? Because it's been a long time, as long as I've been sitting in this chair and speaking to eminent C-suite guests like yourself, we've been talking about it. Where's the barrier? Is it Germany?
It's a combination. I think it's reluctance from local regulators from letting go. I think it's also partly, you know, regulatory agenda, it not being the highest agenda for quite some time. But I do see more momentum, particularly in capital markets union, getting traction from the ECB and other regulators.
Yeah, just as I continue to read your results here, I mean, you speak glowingly as well, increasing your customer base, 99,000. Of course, Germany being a key part of that, recommended bank in 4 of your 10 retail markets, etc. as well. But what are the barriers to your continued growth then? I mean, we've just spoken then about the banking union. Other parts, though, that you might worry about?
No, I think it's about consistency of execution of our strategy, becoming more digital, becoming more capital light as a business model, continuing to grow our primary customer. So I think that's what we have focused on, and we will continue to focus on. And I think what we really find ourselves pleased with the beginning of this year is that we have a strong foundation, strong, excellent results on which to base that growth on.
Yeah, tonight a very interesting set of results. Thank you so much for the time, and thank you as well for the just clear sense on the banking sector as well that you see around Europe. Tanate Futrakul is the CFO at ING. Still in lending, Standard Chartered posting a pre-tax profit of $1.9 billion for the first quarter. That's up 5.5% and ahead of expectations. The lender left its full-year guidance unchanged, still forecasting operating income growth towards the top of its 5-7% target range.
Spain's BBVA has submitted a 12 billion euro merger offer to rival Banco Sabadell in a deal that could create a lender with more than 1 trillion euros in assets. The new bank would aim to be the largest by market cap in the euro area, according to BBVA. The fresh proposal comes nearly 4 years after previous talks between the two lenders collapsed. I think that's obviously fascinating. I know we've got to move on, but like, you've got this one, you've got the UBS Credit Suisse situation in Switzerland as well. Obviously, they are merged now, but the Swiss regulators and bankers looking at how they can rein in their concerns about this huge behemoth that is UBS now as well. You're getting more of this consolidation in Spain as well. And then you're going to get schizophrenia from the politicians and the regulators. On one hand, great, we've got banking mergers happening, which means lower cost for the banks, which means bigger, better banks as well. On the other hand, they're going to worry that there's a concentration of risks in the one place as well. It's going to be fascinating to watching them squirm all over these.
Yeah, exactly. Where does it go from here, actually, and how much more consolidation are we expected to see then in this space? Well, coming up on the show, though, US job openings fall to a 3-year low in the month of March. That points to more softening in the labor market. We'll have the latest next. Plus, Novo Nordisk is set to report its first quarter results. We'll be joined by Sylvia later this hour to break down those numbers. And earnings season continuing, particularly here in Europe as well, where we'll be speaking to the CEO of Pandora later on. Tune in for that interview at 8:30 CET.
Listen to CNBC's Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the biggest tech news from across the globe. Join me, Arjun Karpal.
And me, Tom Chitty, every week as we bring you insights into the top stories, unpack the latest trends, and find out where the industry is headed.
Now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has admitted the recent uptick in U.S. inflation is concerning. Well, it should be, shouldn't it? As the Fed kept rates unchanged at 5.25 to 5.5% range. However, Mr. Powell struck a less hawkish tone than many markets had initially feared, as he played down the chance of the Fed returning to rate hikes. Arabile.
Well, U.S. job openings fell to their lowest level in 3 years in the month of March. That's according to the latest JOLTS survey. Vacancies declined to a seasonally adjusted 8.5 million. That's less than analysts had expected, indicating that the labor market may be cooling off further. Meanwhile, the latest data from ADP does suggest that hiring has not slowed down, though, in the month of April. Private payrolls rose at a faster than expected pace, with companies adding 192,000 workers. Now, ADP chief economist Neela Richardson told CNBC wage growth in the U.S. is resilient.
So the fact that we're seeing a little more strong growth in pay growth for people switching jobs and still pretty high job openings means that wages are not playing along with a 2% target yet. They're still higher than that 2% target would allow for. And so as we look at what the labor market's saying, it's saying to the Fed, we are a smoking ember and we could ignite and watch wages. Wage growth is still strong.
Guy Steer, head of FI research at SocGen, joining us now to unpack this a little bit. Guy, good morning to you. I mean, Jay Powell had made it clear that he wants to cut but can't, and also says this is restrictive enough territory. No hike is likely. Is his inflation optimism justified?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think that if you look at the data that we had over the first quarter and you annualize the inflation rate over the first quarter, it's running at about 5%. So that would suggest that things are still very much not under control. And that in the comment you just referred to in terms of wages, wages are definitely part of that. I think from Powell's perspective, though, if you look at it, I think when he looks at the data, he says maybe the underlying inflation would have been closer to a monthly rate of around 0.3, which would get me closer to an underlying inflation rate of somewhere in the order of 3.5, with which you add in 2% growth, 5.5% rates are broadly correct. So I'm going to still leave it where we are now. And we're going to wait, and we need more data to make a judgment one way or the other. So I think that is kind of the underlying message that we heard from the Fed yesterday.
If we need more data, should we just be looking at it on a month-on-month basis? Because it feels as though we also get communication from the Fed almost every day, really, when one looks at it now. Should we start looking at this data a little bit longer term, or maybe just on a three-month basis even as well, to track that kind of trend that the Fed needs?
Well, I think that that's probably what the Fed has been doing. But if you look at it on a 3 month basis, what we've had is 3 months of very high inflation data. So that's why there has been the shift in terms of the market sentiment. And that's why I think there's been the shift in the communication from the Fed. But your point is a good one, which is to say, maybe, I mean, we had a Q4, which was definitely moving very quickly in the right direction. Q1 is moving in the wrong direction. Maybe Q2 will have a shift back in terms of the right direction. So I think more than anything else, the comments that we've been hearing are we need more time to kind of see what the impact of the rate hikes we've had so far has been.
Guy, I'm unbelievably, nice to see you, by the way, my friend. I'm unbelievably fascinated by the situation at the moment. The market is doing, look, we're off a 4% last month, but so what? We look where we've come from as well. And there doesn't seem to be any pain anywhere. When I look at the corporate bond market, I look at the sovereign market, I look at the equity market, I look at the foreign exchange market, I was told that if we stay this high for so long, there's going to be something breaking. You were told that. We were told that it would break and there'd be pain somewhere. Is it there, Guy? Is it just yet to rear its head?
Well, so it's certainly not there yet. No, I mean, if you look at the big surprise that we've had is that the economic growth in the fourth quarter was so good, that the Q4 earnings were so good. And we've been seeing that again in this earnings season, that the Q1 earnings have been very good, particularly in the US. In Europe, there's been a little bit more pain in some areas. But as you say, there has really been remarkably little pain in terms of the corporate world. There are some areas of stress. I mean, as you mentioned, the dollar has been very strong, particularly against the yen. That has been very much a theme. in the past couple of weeks, and it isn't going away. There are some areas of data which are a little bit weak. When you talked about the jobs figures, you can read into them really what you want. You can pick out the weaker figures or look at the stronger figures. But on a broad basis, the economy has been remarkably strong. And I think that also plays into the sense of the question in terms of interest rates is, do we really need an interest rate cut, given that so many parts of the economy are doing so well?
That is exactly my next point. I mean, we've gone from this amazing scenario where the market geniuses thought we were going to get 150 basis points of cuts late last year, even though the Fed was saying around about half that. Now those same geniuses seem really happy with just one or two this year as well. So the point I was going to make is the point you perhaps already made. Is there any pressure from any area of the market for any rate cuts whatsoever, given everything we've already just said?
Not really, no. I mean, I think our scenario is that there won't be any cuts this year. The bigger question is, I think, on everybody's mind and should be, is, are we going to get cuts in 2025? But clearly, that's a long way away. We're going to get a lot of data between now and then, so we're really going to have to see how things shape up. But at the moment, you have the pressures that you see in credit markets or in equity markets, as you referred to, are not about the economy today. They're about geopolitical risk. So you're not going to solve geopolitical risk by cutting interest rates now. So there isn't any economic pressure for an interest rate cut at the moment.
Let's flip over to Paris. I'd always want to flip over to Paris because I love it. Or more specifically, Frankfurt. I've just had a CFO on, Tanat Futrkul from ING. And, you know, I didn't see any pressure on this side of the Atlantic either. We've just seen numbers from Stanchart, albeit Asia focus. Again, looking pretty relaxed in the paddock as well. The conventional logic is, yes, we must cut here in Europe because we have different dynamics as well. But is that a slam dunk, Guy?
It's not a slam dunk either. No, I mean, I think that there are areas of weakness in the European economies. I think that there is more weakness in terms of Germany. I mean, the GDP figures that we had this week were better than expected. So clearly, that gives the ECB wiggle room, and the inflation figures were probably a little bit higher than expected. So that would encourage them also to wait. So potentially you could see European interest rates staying higher for longer. But there are more series of weakness here. If you look at the Q1 earnings figures, for example, the auto sector has generally been a little bit spotty. Some of the retail sectors have been a little bit weak. So there's been it's a much less healthy corporate environment in Europe than it is in the US. Having said that, country risk is really very low. Corporate bond risk, which is an area I follow particularly, is very low. And I think actually we're probably going to see spreads continue to tighten over the second quarter. So it's not going to be those markets which push the central bank to do something.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to cnbc.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.